Thank you. Our first item on the agenda today is public comment. This is a period devoted to comments on particular items on the agenda. Do we have anyone wishing to speak this morning? I don't see anyone, so we'll move on to the adoption of the October 24th, 2013 agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Our third item is the consent agenda. Do we have any discussion or a motion?
Second.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion carries. On to our public hearing action items. And do we have any today?
There are
no items today. All right. This meeting's moving quickly. We're to number five already.
The record, I think, is 28 minutes.
Okay. I don't think we're going to do that today. But that would be nice, wouldn't it?
And that was years ago.
We'll have to make that a goal probably for a future meeting. But we'll try. Okay, we're down to number five, which is report, discussion, action. And our first item there is 2014 Board of Health meeting schedule. Do we have somebody prepared to talk on that? Dr. Isaac?
Please. I'll ask for help when I need it. But before you see the Board of Health proposed meeting schedule for 2014. You'll see that the holidays are in green and the proposed board meetings are in some color that I can't define, pinkish. Those are generally on the fourth Thursday of every month and are generally at this time. The exceptions would be if you look in April, we propose holding an evening meeting in which the major focus of discussion would be the budget. And we propose holding it in the evening so that members of the public who wish to come may be able to do so. And then in November, because of the conflict with the Thanksgiving holiday, you'll see that it's again on a Monday, but at the regular time. And then, as I think per your usual, there would be no meeting in December unless something urgent comes up that we would work with the chairman to determine whether we wanted to propose one for that month.
Thank you. Do we have any discussion on that or any proposed changes? We do need a motion.
Second.
Yep. Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And the motion carries. That takes us to our second item under report discussion action items, which is Blue Diamond pool inspection, direct staff accordingly or take other actions deemed necessary.
Members of the board, good morning. My name is Paul Klaus, and I'm the environmental health manager for the aquatic health program. And with me today is Jackie Reese Curl, the supervisor of the Aquatic Health Program. We're before you today at your request to provide further information regarding the permit suspension, subsequent reopening of the Blue Diamond Recreation Association pool in August. Ms. Curl will provide a brief presentation regard to the actions taken and the law, regulations, and policies, procedures relevant to those actions. We'll then, of course, be available to answer your questions.
Jackie Reese Curl, supervisor of the Aquatic Health Program and Environmental Health. Before I get to the actual presentation, I would like to address some of the concerns that were brought forward by Mr. Billingsley in the last Board of Health meeting. One of the items is he stated in his public comment period that he didn't require a lifeguard. Per NAC 444, any pool that is greater than 2,000 square feet does require a lifeguard. Their pool is 2,618 square feet, so they are required to provide lifeguard service. It's not an issue that they don't provide it, but it is a requirement. There was a concern that we didn't provide notice or warning for the inspection. There is no regulatory requirement that we need to provide notice prior to inspection. The idea is that when we go out to inspect a facility that's in operation, that we're ensuring that those safe conditions that they're required to maintain their facility to are present at all times, not just when they think that we're going to walk through and assess them at that moment. There was a concern that we haven't provided a list of closure with fee items and that he didn't have access to such a list. That list has been provided on our SNHD website under the pool program, now titled the Aquatic Health Program, since 2004. In reference to having two drains versus one, I will defer to the presentation and we'll go into further depth in that. As well as what the definition of what a regulated pool is. In the NRS 444-100, the board expressed concern that we weren't providing the 48 hours required for corrections. What that regulation is it's discussing suspension, which is closure, and revocation. The 48-hour reference is in reference to revocation. Suspension means you're doing the wrong thing right now. We know this is a safety violation that endangers the public, so we're going to close your facility. When it's fixed, we'll come and reinspect it. Revocation means that we're pursuing the action to have your permit go away forever. So the state law is very clear that if you're going to pursue a revocation of that permit, you need to provide them 48 hours to fix whatever's wrong before you go that route. So it really wasn't applicable in this instance. Okay. The definition for a swimming pool, a public bathing place in the NHC 444, basically any public bathing place unless it is located in somebody's backyard. The Nevada Administrative Code is the interpretive document for the Nevada Revised Statutes. This is the law that has been in effect for decades. In 2009, the NRS was amended to add Section 2E that stated any location or structure that is privately owned pool used by members of a private club or invited guests of the members was not considered a public pool anymore. At that time, we had a legal opinion given by our on-staff attorney, Stephen Smith, and it was determined that this new version of the law did not apply to homeowners associations, which is the closest reference that we have to this style pool. Our current legal counsel is in agreement with that determination. In addition to that, several sections of the Nevada Administrative Code specifically refer to this style of pool. And that would be, they define it as condominiums or other facilities containing multiple dwellings. That's a homeowners association. That's a community pool. The sections of the NAC specific to this would be 444-136, which deals with barriers, 444-210, which deals with bathhouses, as well as 444.270, which deals with lifeguards. So it's all throughout that chapter. It's important to understand the pool operator's responsibilities in maintaining a pool. We have a certification program where they have to demonstrate competency through a testing procedure, that they understand the essential risks and that they will maintain that pool in accordance with the Nevada Administrative Code. They are tasked with doing that. We have a separate set of regulations adopted by the Board of Health in 1988 that hold those persons accountable. Also, if it's found repeatedly that that person is not maintaining their pool, the health district can seek to revoke their license. We typically don't do that. We would rather work with industry to have them successfully operate their pools in a safe and sanitary manner. The requirements for inspection. If a violation is found and it's not something that's going to affect the safety or health of the individuals using that facility, we're merely required to provide a written notice, which is what we do. However, when conditions are present that are likely to cause illness or injury at a facility, it is our duty to suspend that permit or close that facility until those conditions are rectified. Next. In this facility, they were inspected on August 8th, and they were found to have a broken drain cover. They paid their fee on August 12th and were reinspected August 13th. Due to concerns that the fee was unjust, they had a meeting with the director and the manager on August 21st. Our closure fee was approved by the Board of Health, the current closure fee, in June of 2010. The list of closure items, as I said before, is present on our website and has been as long as they've been in existence. It's important to understand the unique structural challenges at the Blue Diamond Pool to understand where the risk really comes from. A typical pool is designed where 50% of their flow goes through a gutter or skimmer system, and the other 50% of their flow goes through the main drain. Yes, they do have split main drains. Their gutter system has been deactivated ever since their permit was reactivated in the late 80s. That means that 100% of the flow of water through that recirculation system is going through those drains. The way that pool was originally designed, you were looking at approximately 75 gallons per minute going through each drain. Today, because of the system not operating exactly as it was designed, you've got 150 gallons per minute through each drain. So whether you have one drain or two drains, that's quite a lot of velocity going through a hole about that big. If your drain cover is not in proper repair, you may not get the vacuum suction, but you're still going to have the opportunity for the velocity suction. So why do we hold these facilities accountable? Water recreation facilities are very popular. They provide a number of wellness benefits and so on, but they come with inherent risks. Every year people die using swimming facilities. Every year people are injured. Every year somebody has a life-altering experience. Our goal is to minimize that. Our unannounced inspection, that's test time. If you have questions, we offer things. We are always available on the phone. We would come out and do requested inspections if you're not sure about your facility. But ultimately, if you've been operating all summer long and we come in to do our inspection, we need to know that you are properly identifying the risks within your own facility. I just came back from the World Aquatic Health Conference last week. And I was astounded at how effective Southern Nevada Health District's pool inspection program is when you compare it nationally. Nationally, 12.1% of every pool that's inspected during a routine inspection is closed because of these imminent health hazards, these risks that are inherent that are identified. In Southern Nevada, 7%. That's huge. Almost 50% less than the national average. And in discussions with people, why are we so much more successful? Are we not looking at the same things? Well, no, actually, we're looking at more than a lot of the other health districts. The difference is we do assess that closure fee. That closure fee offers an incentive for people to be more proactive and provide a safer environment for their patrons. Of those 7% that are closed, less than 3% are closed with a fee. So that really hammers home that those nine items that are assessed immediate closure fees really are being controlled much better because of that deterrent. Another thing that was brought up in the last Board of Health meeting was that the facility has a swim team and has 50 members on that swim team. We can't have a swim team and have a private pool. Swim team is competition. Competition typically brings others through.
By invitation.
During the meeting with the director and the manager, I offered to provide an inspection next season prior to them opening the Blue Diamond facility so that any potential risks that were present, they could have that warning inspection, that check off to see, are we where we need to be before we open the pool to the public. As of the last email correspondence I had, Mr. Billingsley respectfully declined to have that inspection take place. We found through the history of the file that they don't provide time and compliance in this facility. When the fence was documented as being easily climbable in 2006, it was an ongoing process that took 5 years for that fence to no longer be climbable. Also, just with simple violations like installing vacuum and pressure gauges on their circulation system, we've received pushback as far as the need to do that. The reason why we require vacuum and pressure gauges, as of this year, our pool program has stepped up their inspections. We now evaluate each and every circulation system on a pool to a higher level. We utilize the vacuum and pressure readings in accordance with the pump curve. It's a calculation. What that does is it tells me what the flow through that system really is. What's the tangible flow? Is it meeting the requirements? Is that system compatible? Is it compatible with what the drain cover ratings are so that we don't have too much water going through what those drain covers were designed for? Is it in compliance with what the filters are rated for? That's why we need that equipment there. And in this case, where the system design is altered greatly because of the gutter system not even being employed, it's extra important that we're able to evaluate that system along those lines. In conclusion, it is our belief that the Blue Diamond Community Pool does not fit any reasonable criteria of a private club. We have not found that they provide proactive management to keep patrons free from unreasonable risks. And as I pointed out during the statistics slide, SNHD's practice of enforcing closures with assessed fees has ultimately provided a much safer community overall for our patrons in Southern Nevada. It's also one more thing, is it is important to understand when the fee was assessed, the operator is not contesting that the violation was present. There's merely a lack of understanding as to the import of the drain cover violation. Are there any questions?
Mr. Beard.
I guess I got hung up on the determination that they're not included in this carve-out that the legislature wrote in. And as I read the carve-out, it's almost written specifically for them. We had a legal counsel that determined that they were analogous to a homeowners association, apparently more analogous to a homeowners association than to the term a private club, which is used in law. And so I guess that seems to me a big corner to get around as a legal opinion. I mean, this has nothing to do with the instance that you found at the pool, and the disagreement over the importance of the drain cover. It's a legal fact or a legal interpretation that seems to me they fit quite clearly in this exception, and we've got a legal counsel that disagrees apparently.
The initial opinion that was done several years ago was not done relative to this fact pattern. It was done for a different issue. The information that was given to staff today with respect to the letter that was provided, Mr. Billingsley states that he is the Blue Diamond Charitable Association is a private club, privately owned, privately operated. I have not had a chance to review this information. When I looked at the Blue Diamond Charitable Association on the Nevada Secretary of State, their articles of incorporation have been revoked. I don't know what they are, quite frankly.
Yeah, right. I don't know that a private club is required to register with the Secretary of State, even if they've got the name that at one point was a 501c3.
I don't know what they are. But this is the first time that a private club is not inherently an HOA. It's not fundamentally an HOA. We're talking about two different issues.
So Mr. Smith's opinion was not really rendered in this instant
case? No, it was not.
And we're relying on your belief that his opinion is analogous to the situation?
No. We were
trying to understand the bullet points. The third one is current legal counsel concurs with the original assessment.
With respect to whether an HOA was
excluded
because the environmental health permits and evaluates pools and HOAs. That's a separate distinct issue. And Mr. Billingsley is saying that he is not representing that he is an HOA, he is representing that he is a private pool, as evidenced by his letter today. That is a separate distinct issue.
And we haven't had that argument back yet?
I have not. So I have no information relative to what he is or what he isn't. I have no information to prove or disprove his existence as a private entity. So I can't comment.
Can I go to the pool?
You could be outside the fence.
You could be my guest.
You could be our guest.
If you look
But no, you really can't.
There is a photo there in the back page. Did you get them on the record? And it says, you clearly posted on the fence.
Do you want them to come to the pool?
Yes.
Before you do, are you finished with your presentation, or do you have other items to present?
I'm done.
Okay. We're ready for Mr. Billingsley to come up.
Thank you.
Just to clarify that issue, if you look at the back pages there, where I published some photos, it shows clearly on there that posted on the fence is private property. The rules are a little hard to read because they've faded out, but it says members and their out-of-town guests only. The list over on the top left of the paper, that is our club membership. You are not automatically a member of the pool by living in Blue Diamond. You have to pay your dues. It is not an HOA. We can't require anyone to pay their dues. That is only by voluntary choice that they pay those dues. The lifeguards actually check everybody before they come in and make sure that they go down the list and say, are you on the list? If you aren't on the list, you can't get in. So I think by very definition, we are a private membership club that it seems that the legislature carved out specifically for this reason.
Do you have an actual entity that you've created, this association?
Yes, it does. We have the Blue Diamond Charitable Association has a board of directors that meets once a month. In the past, I've been on the board. It is my understanding it's a 501c4 corporation. I didn't realize that it was currently the third. They probably haven't paid. Missed it.
I think it's the
501c6.
501c6. Okay. Is it an entity that's registered with the Secretary of State of Nevada?
I thought it was, but apparently it's not currently in compliance.
Do you have evidence of your 501c, whatever it is?
Not with me at this time, but I can get that. Yeah.
Do you have bylaws or things?
Do,
like that?
Yes.
We actually have all that stuff. But I didn't offer it. Sorry, Sheila Billings. I was also on the board and a secretary at one time. I actually have the tax letter with our identification number. I don't know if it's upheld or not. That's not our part of it. We just do the pool. And we do have the bylaws. And I can bring those next meeting when we decide, council decides what we are. I think that's really the crux of the issue is,
But you have some kind of governing body?
Correct.
Is it a board of directors?
It's a board of directors, yes.
I don't think it would be necessary to put on another meeting. I think this can be resolved offline if we could just be presented with the documentary evidence to support whatever they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, personally, and I can't speak for anybody else, I would not be comfortable making a decision on something where our jurisdiction is in question at this point until we have fully vetted the issue. So I also had questions about some other things which may be moot if that turns out to be the fact that we don't have jurisdiction. But this VGV drain issue, is that something that we believe was properly enforced and we have? And that applied to them, or is that something we've since changed our mind on?
We don't enforce BGB.
I'd like to comment to that, actually, if I may, because I actually have my inspection report from, when was this, 2010. And at the time, I was told in no uncertain terms that we had to comply with BGB. The inspectors said, you will be shut down, you will not be allowed to open if you do not install these drain covers. We had had drain covers on there for 60 years, 60 plus years. They were cast iron. They had never broken. We had never had any problems with them. No one had ever been hurt, and they had never broken. It was my understanding that we would be shut down if we did not comply. In fact, the sticker on the bottom of this page says, attention. To ensure compliance with the VGB Act, you must contact a certified pool operator to evaluate your pool for compliance with the VGB Act. You must.
So is that in that report there is from a Southern Nevada Health District inspector?
It is. Now they told me a couple years later, I got a new inspector, and the new inspector said, oh, you didn't need to do that, nobody did that. I spent $2,500 putting in new drain covers that had a plan obsolescence, like an old VW Rabbit. I had a Rabbit in high school that lasted about 5 years before all the plastic bits started breaking off. This lasted less than 5 years. That's what I was supposed to recognize from the top of the pool, underneath 8 feet of water, and see that this was broken and fatally flawed. I don't know. I just go, there seems to me like there should be a better way to do this, rather than slapping us with a heavy fine. My pool is old and funky. I mean, it's a 60-year-old pool. I am doing the best I can to keep this thing operating. I believe it's super important for our community, although it's not a community pool, it is a private pool. But it is a huge part of what adds to our village. I'm trying to keep it running. Honestly, better than that, I'm trying to put in a new pool. I'd like to get it to make it better. I'd like to make it compliant. I would like to work with the health district to keep it up there. But I find that when they slap me with fines, and I'm not complaining, I never said that I didn't get noticed, I'm not complaining that I didn't get noticed that they were showing up. I realize inspections need to be unannounced, otherwise there's no point to it. My problem is that they hit me with a fine when I'm trying to do the best I can.
Okay, before we move on to the fine issue, because that is another issue I'd like to discuss, do we have a response on the drain issue? Did you have a comment?
The concern about the requirement for the drain cover replacement was brought forward as well. In the file, there is nothing that states that they had to change their drains. What Southern Nevada Health District did at the time that the Virginia Graham Baker Act went into law in 2009, was we informed all of our regulated pools and spas of the new law. We stated that we are not the enforcement entity. However, the CPSC is. And should the CPSC find your facility out of compliance, there are heavy fines. We felt that we would be remiss in our duties of properly informing those that we regulate of the repercussions if they didn't comply. Not that we were going to take any enforcement action, but that they were subject to enforcement action by the Consumer Product Safety Commission, who is the enforcement entity. The sticker that was read was taken a bit out of context. The entire notice that Mr. Billingsley was referring to states this: the inspection performed today is to determine compliance with Nevada Administrative Code, NAC 444, public bathing places. It is not an evaluation for compliance with the Virginia Graham Baker Act. To ensure compliance with the Virginia Graham Baker Act, you must contact a certified pool contractor to evaluate your pool or spa for compliance with the VGB Act. Please visit www.cpsc.gov for more information on VGB requirements. At no time in documentation anywhere in this file did somebody write up that he had to change the drain covers at that facility.
And so, Mr. Billingsley, would you agree with that, that other than the sticker and that notice, there's nothing else in writing?
That is true. In writing, it was not. I went back over it. Honestly, it's got writing all over it. When I usually rely upon what they say. And I was relying upon what was reported to me by the inspector at that time, as well as the sticker. I did go to the website. I looked it up. I looked it up online. As you can imagine, $2,500 is a lot of money. I did as much research on that as I did for this meeting. It appeared to me we were going to be shut down if we did not comply.
And so that's based on the sheet that you just presented with the sticker on it, as well as what the inspector told you?
Yes. Okay.
Do we have any more questions on that?
I just looked at his little sticker down here at the bottom. You know, as a business owner, I get hit by, you know, stuff like this all the time. I've just been, had the health district in my office, in the last couple of weeks, wanting me to do this and do this and do this. And that sticker right there to me says, you better, it doesn't say, it says we're not an evaluation, but the mere threat of if you're not complying, when I look at that, that's what I see. If I was a business owner, I'd be, oh man, what do I got to do? Get online. It tells you where to go online. You look, oh, that's not my drain cover, so I would. That definitely tells me you better comply, or just by insinuation, by threat. So, but to me, all this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense if we're not, don't have jurisdiction over this pool anyway. So all this discussion seems kind of.
Well, yeah, and that may be true, but I would, there's just a couple issues I'd like to discuss, just in case we do have to come back, and I just don't see the reason of rehashing everything again. The other issue I had was fines. And am I understanding correctly, Mr. Billingsley, that you're just alleging that you don't see anywhere in the statute that gives the authority to impose fines?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that someplace in the statute or in the amendments to the statute, there probably is the authority to impose fines. I guess I feel like the fines on this case are what brought me here. I have worked with the Southern Nevada Health District. I've had great success with two out of four inspectors or three out of four inspectors. I did have one inspector who was the one who kind of got me to put the new drain covers in that I really had a problem with, and she also cited me for the gate closure, which the prior inspector had said, oh, you've got lifeguards, it's always locked, or it's lifeguarded, it's not that big a deal. She had moved on. The new one immediately slapped me with a fine and closed the pool. It was fixed that afternoon. Same kind of thing in this. I mean, we fixed it as soon as humanly possible, but got slapped with a fine anyway. that's not working with me, I guess. I'm trying to keep the pool operating with very little budget. We don't fit in the box. We're not an HOA. We're not a community pool, public pool. We're this odd entity, this odd duck that sits outside the norm. Which I go back to, that's exactly what the legislature did when they made that carve out exception, was for people like me. And I'm doing the best I can with what I've got.
Okay, and I understand the hardship argument. Do we have authority for the fines? Is there some statute or regulation that gives us that authority? And after anybody?
As the regulatory body, we have the authority to enact regulations and to enforce to the degree that we feel appropriate. So fines would be an appropriate measure of regulation.
And do we have particular fine policies in place or anything like that to give us, that we have implemented pursuant to that broad authority to give the public notice that they will get a fine if they don't comply?
That would be through the fees that were approved by the board.
In 2004, the first closure fee was approved by the board. It was in effect for restaurant facility or food facilities, public swimming pools, and public accommodations. During the last general permit fee increase in 2009, a member from industry is the one who suggested what the fine should be, and we were directed by the board at that time to implement it. Every one of those programs where the fine is applicable has stringent standards as to what would constitute a fine. In the food program, it's imminent health hazard, something that would result in an immediate closure, or an inspection that results in greater than 40 demerits. In the pool program, it's those 9 items that was developed in conjunction with a group from industry in 2004 to a mutually agreed upon list.
So if this does come back and we decide that we do have jurisdiction, I would like to see, you know, the statutory authority that gives us at least the right to regulate and impose fines, and then what specific regulations we've implemented that, you know, do state our policy on fines, if we could.
If I may suggest, if you will provide our legal counsel with the documentation of what you are, so that she can research that, and if she tells us that we don't have regulatory authority, this should not need to come back to you. We will give you back the fines that you have. I think I hear from the board that if she agrees that we do have regulatory authority, I think you have documentation in here already, but we'll make sure that what you asked for we have, and we'll come back next month and give you that information.
Mary Beth.
Thanks, and I appreciate that, because I think there is a question. But, and the first question that I had when we had the presentation was, have the attorney made that determination? Was it based on case law, or was it just, it'd be nice to have some knowledge of the background of that. That might not be necessary if we are finding a different category. The other issue is, it seems like, and I've heard this when I've had input from people in the community, that inspectors will come and have different opinions. And I think that's a concern if we have people saying different things and we're changing the game, changing the rules in the middle of the game. So just a general concern that I've heard out in the community.
And I can state that in the food program, for example, we are starting to standardize all food inspectors to the same standards, the FDA, essentially the FDA standards. And I can't answer for this program, but perhaps you can answer as to whether we have standardized all the pool inspectors.
Prior to last year, the pool inspections were divided up amongst all of the people who do food inspections as well. We have a centralized program, and I can state certainly within the last 2 years there has been much increased standardization, and the same messages being put out by all of the inspectors, because we have a dedicated program. We have a very detailed SOP with that program so that inspectors can go through that and evaluate each problem that they find and enforce it in a uniform manner.
If I may, from my experience, you know, I'm a former investigator with the Food and Drug Administration, and you know that my specialty was biomedical research. And I can tell you that two of us going into Stanford looking at their biomedical research may find the same thing, but because of the willingness of Stanford, for example, to respond to what we find, one person may go forward with one recommendation and one with the other. That's sort of inherent in the process of regulation, where we can, as best as possible, we are standardizing people and should standardize people, but you also should understand that there will be some flexibility in that. And when we get around to the TB issue, you'll see that I've had to use some flexibility from our standing protocols related to that. It's just inherent in regulation in general, but public health regulation specifically.
To go with that and the comment from earlier, you know, let's talk about some specifics. If you had two inspectors, and I guess my question is for you, if you had two inspectors and one looks at a situation and they say, talk about the gate closure, either it's locked or you have a lifeguard on, so don't need to worry about it. And another inspector says, doesn't make any difference, you gotta have it. Is it appropriate to find someone when you've been getting this answer and now you're getting this answer, is it appropriate to find someone when an inspector changes the game?
In that particular instance, there are photos of the gate for both inspections that were referred to. And in the second inspection, there was absolutely no latching mechanism at all installed on that gate, which is different from the year before. I have the photos in the file. There was no documentation of any gate violations. And as I said, there was a complete absence. In that case, if someone didn't address it, then they were not following appropriate protocol, and that would have to be addressed through our own administrative processes. But I can tell you that with the SOP that we have in place today, it outlines very specifically what needs to be in place. Absolutely.
Yeah, today. Maybe not then.
Even then, we have that SOP. It has been revised and updated in the last 2 years, about three times, mostly for clarification, mostly in response to some of the comments that industry has brought in, as well as to something if it wasn't worded very specifically and it was open to misinterpretation, we hammered down that wording. But that SOP was written in 2008-2009, right in there is when it started. And the gate portion, it's very, very specific in NAC 444-136 subsection 6B. All gates must be self-closing and positively self-latching from any open position, period. It doesn't give exception. That is the law. And that should be enforced. That has not changed from the 70s.
Yes. I'm just boiling down to what I understand today's issue is. As I understand it, an inspector came out, inspected your pool, found a violation. You corrected the violation subsequent to the inspection. Whether it was a time issue, whatever, the inspector and the department is issuing a fine.
They did that immediately.
Okay, issuing a fine. What you're here is asking that the fine be either reduced or eliminated, and that's the issue of the day. Is that correct?
Two issues, I guess. I'm asking for that. And while I was doing research on that, I realized that there is this exception carved out, which seems we seem to fall squarely within.
Oh, I understand. So if we have so that's what you're requesting, and then if we have jurisdiction, we have to decide if we change the fine or leave the fine based on our policies. If we don't have jurisdiction, we'll meet at another time and have beer.
There you go.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to do.
Do we have any other comments or questions from the board?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I took the liberty of jumping online and I pulled up AB 350 from the 2009 session, which is the law or the bill that changed this law to add that exception. Interestingly enough, the entire bill is about HOAs. So the fact that we're relying on a legal opinion that finds that this element of a bill, which was all about HOAs, has nothing to do with HOAs, is probably an incorrect legal opinion. And I applaud the move by the health district and past administrations to put in place a standard process for this, because that is the problem. We've had a wide variety of practices depending on who comes out and inspects, and we hear about it all the time, and it's extremely frustrating for our community, this disconnect, and I'm very pleased that we're taking some steps to move forward, and every year gets past that 2009, 10, 11 spot where we made the changes is going to be a positive thing, in my opinion. I have a problem taking action on this today.
I looked through the legislative history of AB 350, and you're correct, it does have to do with the community interest CICs and the HOAs, but there was no reference to the language that added to 444-065, I think I added at the last minute, because I could not find any discussion with respect to adding this language.
You could go back into the previous revisions,
yes,
and see each amendment.
Yes, and I didn't see it.
Sometimes legislatures pass laws that have unintended consequences.
Exactly.
Sorry, Bob, but I mean it happens, right? So
exactly.
Sometimes you have to look at the plain language of the statute, of course. But I agree with Bob. I would not be comfortable deciding this issue today without all the information in front of us. Do we have anything else from the board?
Do we need our legal opinion or our legal counsel to look at not just this particular situation, whether or not they fit the box of a membership, but to also revisit the HOA legal opinion?
No, all I need to know is what he is.
If we're thinking that that original legal opinion needs to be revisited and refreshed, because we may have concerns that it's correct, we may need to look at that bigger, broader issue, because that really affects us.
Well, I can certainly do that if the board wishes. For today's issue, I need to know what.
Correct. There's two different things.
Yes.
And Mr. Billingsley, on the issue of, you know, whether your particular association fits within this exception, this is not a threat. But it's my observation, which is that if you want the benefit of the law, then you should be in compliance. And I know that's not you. You're not on the board or whatever, but you know, you need to provide us documentation on what you are. Make sure that your entity is not in default, if that's the case. Pay the, you know, make sure your entity is in good standing, and then you can, you know, claim the benefit of whatever laws you have there. So provide bylaws, provide articles of organization, provide your 501c, whatever exception you have, the documentation and your tax ID, and don't make the health district beg you for, you know, for those documents, because Annette wants to make it, you know, she wants to see everything, and then she can make a decision based on that. In terms of the broader issue, whether there's a general exception for private entities, do we want Annette to weigh in on that, or?
This is just one person's opinion. I just want to know if we have jurisdiction, because if I understand correct, as I just said before, an inspection was made, a violation was found, a fine was associated with a violation, the violation was recognized by you guys, it was repaired, and now the issue at hand is whether or not we should suspend the fine, modify the fine, or give the fine if we have jurisdiction. As I understand, that's what our action item is.
Right, and that will be determined on the basis of the documentation that I get from Mr. Billings.
Exactly. So from my perspective, what we want to know is we want to delay this until we know if we have jurisdiction. And then we have to just make the decision.
So if I get adequate documentation from Mr. Billingsley, this will be resolved and we won't need to bring it back. We can just do an update under the report items, informational report items, and see if it's been resolved.
I'd still like to know whether or not HOAs in general are covered or excluded.
That's fine.
That more broad issue.
Is there a separate, Mr. Chair, through you, is there a separate statute that governs HOA pools?
No, it's the same. The NAC is the same, sorry.
No, it's the same.
Yeah, no, you're on.
We have a number of pools that would be considered private, but that are regulated. And that would be, HOA, homeowners associations, condominiums, townhomes, apartment complexes, where the use of the pool is limited to the people that live there and their guests. So yes, it would have a very broad impact on the safety and health of people's swimming facilities here in Clark County if that were the case.
So if we could maybe get, it sounds like we have some appetite for you coming back and telling us who this law applies to and who it doesn't.
I can review.
Yeah. Dr. Iser, do you?
Yeah, I appreciate, Ms. Crowley, that you wanted to see the broader issue, but can I bring us to a much broader issue than that? And that's the health and safety, which is our responsibility for all of this county and all of our visitors. And I would recommend to Mr. Billingsley that he should operate a safe pool. I would hope that people here are convinced that he hasn't had that history over the last 5 or 7 years. If I may, let me finish.
Sure.
And I would ask each of you whether you would let your children or grandchildren go to this pool. Usually, when someone meets our regulations after a fine or after a finding, that's the best time to go to it. And so I would want to know whether you've replaced, and I think you have, that drain cover. But I would submit that if an entity, no matter what its status is, can't operate a safe pool, maybe it shouldn't be operating a pool for the safety of our public.
Well, I think you'll get agreement from everyone on that.
I know everyone.
I think at issue here is whether or not we have the authority.
Absolutely.
And if we don't, we need to get either that fixed or we need to understand it.
I agree with you.
Because we're just going to continue to have people come in and say, you don't have authority over us. It's just going to continue to be a legal wrangling back and forth. And we need to just get it clarified.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
And the pool is currently shut down. Is that correct?
It's closed for the winter. And if I may, I have appreciated, and I said this last month, and it's in my paper, that I have appreciated their oversight. In many ways, they've helped me make this a better pool. My problem is with the kind of one conflicting reports from inspectors, and then with the kind of heavy-handedness, or what I see as heavy-handedness of the fines. They, just to kind of clear my good name, they said, well, it took them 5 years to comply with the unclimbable fence. That's not quite true. I actually complied immediately. I wrote a grant, got a grant to pay for a fence. In consultation with the inspector at the time, I applied construction netting around the outside of that fence. Later on, the next inspector came in and said, well, that doesn't meet our requirements. You need to put up a new fence. Honestly, it took me a while to get around that one and to kind of come to terms with that and finally do that. It is, and again, we don't have a large budget to operate on. I'm operating on pennies. And to have them kind of give me conflicting decisions or information that isn't actually the case has cost me like $4,000 in the last 8 years. That's a lot of money out of our budget. I would like to get away from all this. I'd like to build a new pool. I'd like to move on. That's my goal. But I have not, what has gone from a very collegial relationship where they helped steer me in the right direction and told me what was important to do has gone into one that now they come in and they shut me down and they fine me. Our pool is old and funky, and I realize there are all sorts of things wrong with it. But I would like to continue to operate it in a safe manner until we can build a new one. That's all I'm trying to do.
Thank you, and I hope you understand from our perspective that we understand your hardship argument. That's probably not going to get you very far in terms of public safety. It may get you a little ways in terms of fines or things like that, but you know, our duty is to enforce public safety, and that's what the health district is all about. And so we need to ensure, if we have jurisdiction, and if we don't have jurisdiction, whoever has jurisdiction is going to want to ensure that you're operating a safe pool, and that's in the best interest of the kids and everybody you're helping. You know, I think we all hear that you have good intentions, but sometimes, you know, that's why we have regulatory bodies, is to make sure, in spite of your good intentions, that you're doing the right thing, because there's a lot of things you think you're doing well, you know, maybe you're not actually watching out for the other side of things, and that's what we're here to do, to help you. So we appreciate you showing up today. Sounds like we have some information that's got to come back to us, and then if we have to put this back on the agenda, we will.
Okay.
You just have one more question.
Yes.
I'll send that information.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
If we do determine that HOAs are not covered, you know, if you come back and tell us that, who does take care of HOAs?
No one.
So if we don't, no one does.
Right. That's correct.
It's not good.
Since I'm getting ready to buy a condo, I'm a little bit frightened by that.
And there are holes in the law. I mean, that's why there's new legislative sessions all the time.
Every 2 years.
That's right. So, you know, that's an issue you can take before your legislator.
Once again, we are not an HOA. That is, you are not required.
We understand. We understand that. Ms. Crowley is just asking on the broader issue whether we have regulatory authority for HOAs. So we'll do both things, your particular case and the broader HOA. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I appreciate everybody's participation in this. I know, you know, when these things go on for a long time, they tend to get, I sense that there's some personal feelings here and frustrations, and we don't need to make it that way. We need to back down and just look at the, everybody's trying to work this out in the proper way. So thank you. All right, we will move on now then to the board reports. Do we have any reports from any members of the board? Okay, hearing none, we will move on to item number 7 on the agenda, which is the health officer and staff reports. And we'll turn the time over to Dr. Eisen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been busy over the last a little bit over half weeks that I've been here. You all know that. Beyond the issues that we'll discuss over the next two bullets, I've been out to meet most of you, at least half of you, I believe, and we've had to cancel a few of those meetings because of the TB issue and some others. I will remind you, I'm going to surgery next week, so don't expect me to come out and do any visits then. But when I get back, we'll be scheduling the rest of those visits and coming out to meet the rest of the folks. I met with Mr. Woodbury today and Mr. Beers. I think we're meeting right after, so that I was counting those two meetings as part of my half. I've also been out and met city managers. I've been to Mesquite and Las Vegas, and I'll be out to see the rest of the city managers. I plan to meet with all of the police chiefs. I've met with one in Mesquite. I was fortunate that they did a broader meeting since it's a little bit distant. Met the fire chief up there as well, and I've met the new chief McDonald in Las Vegas City. So those are meetings yet to go. Still CEOs, the Community Health Center, and all the other partners that we can think of. That's what I've been busy doing beyond the next two items.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and move into the next two items, TB investigations first.
I would like to give you an update on the larger issue related to the newborns in the NICU, and then ask Mr. Cicci if he has any update for you on the other issue he brought up last month, which is the XDR, extreme drug resistant TB cases. As you know, there was a young mother who gave birth at one hospital, or who was in a hospital, gave birth at another, to twins. They were in the NICU. She subsequently, because of her illness, was transferred to a hospital in Southern California, where she died not very many, I think it was a day and a half later. They and the hospitals here did not diagnose her with TB, so on autopsy, they diagnosed her with tuberculosis. Immediately, we were notified, and we notified the hospital who put the surviving twin. The first twin died soon after birth, and as you may know, as young as they were, the mortality rate among twins that young is very high anyway. The surviving twin then was put into isolation immediately and was subsequently found to have active tuberculosis. We did an initial investigation related to the contacts that the mother might have had outside the hospital and to contacts in the hospital, and made the initial determination that we did not believe that any of the newborns in that NICU had likely been exposed. There are a variety of medical reasons for that, the primary one being that most infants that young do not transmit tuberculosis. We still can't guarantee you what the method of transmission was, but one family member was found to have active tuberculosis and one hospital worker was found to have active tuberculosis that we believe is linked to either the mother or the infant. We can't do 100% of that linkage now scientifically because we look at the genotype of the tuberculosis germ itself, and we haven't been able to get that on the other active cases. So we can't do 100% link. What we refer to as an epilink, so epidemiologically, is it linked? That's good enough for us to act on, and for any health district or department to act on. Because we found that there was likely to have been transmission in the NICU, we then expanded that to include the most recent part of the investigation, which includes 141 infants. 101 of those were likely exposed to either the mother or the infant, and another 40 were exposed to the hospital worker only. We don't have all of that data in, but we do have this EpiLink that indicates that there are some people who were exposed to one of those three active cases, maybe to the hospital worker and to either the infant, or to the infant or mother. And so we're following up on that. We still are doing some testing. We are still identifying perhaps some people who might have been at risk that either the hospital or we didn't know about initially. We're not done with that testing, but we'll continue and can give you another update next month. We do believe this EpiLink is not just epidemiological, but we look at the resistance patterns of the tuberculosis germ itself, and the resistance pattern in the hospital worker is similar to that in the infant. Remember, those are the, we didn't get any samples, or Southern California didn't get any samples of the mother for us to be able to compare. So you've probably heard all of this in the media. That's what I've been willing to disclose. I did tell the media that once we have this phase of the investigation completed, and that involves really looking at the tests that we have run, if we have to repeat any tests, and an X-ray on those people who are positive, that's a clinical decision making, it's part of clinical decision making, and so we'll have to do some individual evaluations before we finish up this part of the investigation, as well as anyone else who we may have found could be linked. And let me also add and warn you that if we find anyone else with active tuberculosis, we'll have to expand again the investigation. That person may or may not have been really linked to this case, but that's what we would do normally with any active TB case. The worrisome piece that I'll explain to you is that
the farther we get in terms of the exposure to any of those three cases, the more it might likely have been an exposure, either in there are immigrants among the group that we are testing, could have been an exposure in their home of origin, their country of origin, or might have been exposed to one of the 80 to 100 other cases that we have. So we don't want to continually expand, and say it's linked to one of these three cases. We may have to start what I would consider to be an independent investigation related to one of these, if it's not linked directly to one of the original cases. Did I explain that well enough?
Yes.
Okay.
Any questions or comments? Go ahead and move on to the next item then. Thank you.
Let me see, do you all have any questions on the other cases? Or Mr. CG, I don't believe you have any further update except that it is one.
Morning, members. There, we have received more lab reports back on our foreign traveler, and more resistance is being revealed. And we have our infectious disease specialist, Dr. Greenberg, is going to assume care, and we've consulted with National Jewish Aid think tank and treatment facility in Denver, Colorado, for assistance as well. That's it.
And for those of you who don't know it, National Jewish Hospital is, I think in most experts' opinion, the quaternary care for tuberculosis. It's the place where you, if you have cases that you cannot cure, you send them to. And I think I might have mentioned last month that in an investigation that involved some high school students in Southern California, the original student had to be sent there for surgical treatment that normally most hospitals may be a little bit hesitant to do, but National Jewish has the expertise, so we rely on them. And Mr. Cici would agree, and I might have mentioned to you that we've consulted on all of these cases with the TB Center, the Curry TB Center in San Francisco, which is funded by CDC, to provide this kind of backup to any health district or department, or to any clinician who has a question related to TB. I'm sorry to prolong that.
Sorry, I'm going to prolong it just a tad longer. I just want to ask a question, if my memory banks are correct here, and that's that for someone who has contracted TB, they can be effectively cured, but it's not a true cure. They can still continue to harbor within them nodules that are potentially active in the future.
This gets a little bit complex, but if I end up with a positive test, either a blood test or a skin test, the next step is to make sure that I'm not infectious. And if that's part of what the x-ray helps us to do, as well as a history and some other things. If I'm found to be non-infectious, that's called latent tuberculosis. If I'm not treated, then indeed that tuberculosis germ continues to lie in nodules, little capsules, in the lung, perhaps elsewhere, and can be reactivated. So when we talk about the progression to active tuberculosis from latent tuberculosis, about 10% of cases nationwide will progress to active TB without treatment. And about half of that 10% occurs. The older you are, the more your immunity starts to wane naturally. And if you're on chemotherapy, if you're on prednisone or any other steroid, then that weakens your immune, or you come down with diabetes. That's an immune suppressive disorder, HIV and a variety of other things. That's when we start to see this reactivation that we see in nursing homes and in other older adults. So that's what you're referring to, and that's absolutely correct. What we encourage people to do with latent tuberculosis is to take medication. And if they take that medication, we do consider that a cure, and that they will not be able to come down with active tuberculosis. That's why we offer that treatment. And then in the third case, if they have active tuberculosis and they follow the treatment, then they should be cured as well.
Okay, thank you.
But there's always these caveats. I could be, if I'm one of those people who have active tuberculosis and am cured, and then 10 years from now, I could be exposed again to another tuberculosis germ, I could come down with it again. So there are a bunch of caveats.
I have one more. Is the drug regimen forever?
No. The drug regimen Well, it depends. The XDR TB will not be forever, but it will be for a long period of time. Could be years. In most cases, and in the case of this large group that I spent some time talking to you about, no, it'll be 6 to 9 months. And it depends on whether you're active or whether you're latent TB. And we do follow with tests to make sure that you're, in an active case, we get sputum samples and we look under the microscope to see if we see any mycobacteria. And then we do a culture as well. And we won't let you go back to work until we feel you're not infectious. And then we will continue the drug therapy for months after that, depending on how long it needs to be. But this particular germ is susceptible, this particular mycobacteria is susceptible to the antibiotics that we use in first-line treatment. The other thing that I have mentioned to the media, and I'm sorry I'm prolonging this, but this isn't Mycobacterium tuberculosis. There are a whole bunch, Mycobacterium is the genus, and then there are a bunch of species of tuberculosis-like germs. This one is bovis. It's found primarily in cattle. It's easily, relatively transmitted to humans. If the cow is coughing, as it's transmitted pulmonary-wise in regular tuberculosis, and it's also transmitted in unpasteurized milk products if the cow has Mycobacterium bovis. There are other species as well that can cause pulmonary tuberculosis. And then there's another related germ called Mycobacterium leprae, which is causes leprosy. It's very similar. It's just not transmitted in the same way as what we consider to be tuberculosis. But we use the phrase tuberculosis for any generically for pulmonary transmission.
I've never seen a cow cough, but now it's starting.
What's the question for you, Matt?
Exactly.
This one was bovis?
My dogs?
Yes, it's bovis.
So how does the health department relate to the Department of Agriculture for inspection to see if they can't track down the herd?
Well, we believe, and I don't want to go into too much detail.
No, just curious. Do you have a relationship?
Oh, yes, there is a relationship. But we believe that this these milk products didn't come from within the state. And I might have mentioned last month that the FDA, that's one of the reasons the FDA will never, in my opinion, allow unpasteurized milk products to go across state lines. It's not just this, it's other bacteria and other things as well.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and move on to the building update if you're ready.
I am. Elaine Glazer, who has been our lead on the building, as many of you now know, has given her notice. She'll end service with us on the 1st, which is a week from Friday. And so we, too, are taking over as the leads, and I've agreed to give you the update. We have identified several buildings that we would like to purchase. I think you've had that update some months ago before I got here. One of those buildings is 400 Shadow Lane, which is where our clinics are now. We have been working very closely with the county and their property management group there to get us estimates, appraisals on these properties. By the end of this week, we hope that all four appraisals may be back. We did see, but didn't get handed, two appraisals earlier this week from county property managers. And our next step then is to look at those, try to figure out, again, we'll know what at least the appraisers think the buildings are worth. We don't know that the buildings are for sale. I think that anyone in this room can agree if you offer me double what my condo is worth, I'm likely going to sell it to you. So anyone is probably willing to sell at their right price, but at a price that's affordable and reasonable to us may be a different issue. So that will be the next step that we'll be taking along with property management from, again, the Clark County property managers.
Have any questions, comments? All right, thank you. Well then, just note that the informational items are there for your review on item number 8, and move on to our final agenda item, which is public comment. Do we have anyone from the public wishing to speak on anything? All right, thank you everybody for attending. Meeting adjourned.
I hadn't heard back from him, that's why I put the note there, but I heard back from him.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.